Hi, welcome back. My guest is Rowan Miller. I'm Robert Green. My guest is Rowan Miller. Hey, Rowan.
Hi, Robert. Good
Thanks
to see
for
you
coming
again.
On.
Thank you very much.
And Rowan is here to talk about Entity Framework. And you just gave a talk this morning, was it?
I did,
Framework 6.
Just had enough time to scoot over here afterwards.
Excellent. To a packed room of very happy attendees.
Yep, and a lot of questions.
Sweet. So we're going to talk about what's new, what's coming up in Entity Framework. And then after that, I wanted to discuss the open sourced nature of Entity Framework.
Sounds
and
great.
We'll talk about that for a little bit, answer any viewer email, and that should take the whole half hour.
Sounds good
We can sit here for days talking about one of my favorite topics.
Yeah, likewise.
But they'll kick us off the stage after half an hour.
Yep.
So let's start off with what's coming in Entity Framework 6.
Sure. So EF6 is our next release that's coming up. We have Beta 1 available at the moment, and our final RTM is going to be alongside the next version of Visual Studio. So we've got a bunch of new features coming on the big feature side, the things we've really had to work on. We've got asynchronous query and save coming. So we added the async and await keywords in .NET 4.5.
Very cool, very cool.
Unfortunately, in EF5, we didn't have time to enable async and await with EF, but in EF6, you'll be able to do asynchronous queries and be able to push data back to the database asynchronously too.
So is there a number you're throwing out on what percentage performance improvement you'll get? Of course, your mileage varies, but as a...
Yeah, absolutely. So async, I think, is a very misunderstood feature at times. We often think async is about running things in parallel, running things faster, but a lot of the time, particularly in web scenarios, it's about freeing up threads to process other requests while stuff is happening that doesn't need CPU time from our managed threads. So I did some demos. There's actually a session I did here where we showed almost a 50% improvement in a very targeted scenario just by running things asynchronously. Obviously, in the real world, you're probably not going to get quite that increase, and it depends on the load on the web server, et cetera, too.
So is it more a scenario of if you have to query three different data sources, you can do them in parallel? What's the scenario where that
So
really
with EF,
you the
we
most?
Don't support running multiple queries from the same context at the same time. And that's pretty standard with components that support asynchronous. For example, HTTP client and web client, they only support one request per instance of those classes. So EF is the same. If you're working in a context, you can have one asynchronous save or one asynchronous query running at the same time. And we'll actually detect if you violate that and give you an exception.
Okay.
If you're loading data that's just read-only and you don't want to actually manipulate, then you could spin up two contexts and run parallel queries. Where async is more useful, let's take the web server as an example. If I'm running a request that needs to reach out to the database, that database call could take, say, 20 milliseconds to come back.
Right.
During that 20 milliseconds with async, I can free up the thread and give it back onto the pool to process another request while I'm waiting for the data to come back.
Okay.
In a client scenario, this might be I leave the UI responsive instead of locking it up while I wait for the data to come back. The main thread is then free to keep the UI responsive or refresh the UI.
Okay,
with
so it's still as much about the responsive UI than it is about improving just the over-the-wire data querying.
Correct.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. And there are some scenarios where running things in parallel can give you some great performance benefits. Like I said, multiple database queries aren't really a key scenario, but you can certainly run a database query at the same time as you're running a request off to a web API service. Instead of running one and then waiting for it and then running the next one. And that will improve your response time in a client application or on a web request.
Okay, got it.
Yeah. So other cool things we've got coming up. My favorite feature is custom conventions for code first. So if we're writing a code first model, then code first uses a set of conventions to look at my classes and work out what are my primary keys, what are my foreign keys, what are the column names and table names in the database and the data types I should use. They're a pretty good set of defaults, but a lot of people don't follow them. As an example, we expect primary keys to be called ID or the type name followed by ID. If you don't follow that convention, in EF5 and earlier, you're forced to do a lot of repetitive, very error-prone configuration. But custom conventions let you write a simple, concise, very easy to understand line of code that expresses how your model is created. Saves you writing all that repetitive configuration.
So you would do that once, and then it would know across the entities which one is the ID?
Yeah, a good way to think about it is bulk configuration. So I could say, within the Fluent API, I could say, give me all properties, then filter on the name of those, and give me all properties where the name is key, and then go ahead and configure them is the key.
Ah, okay.
Another example would be to say, give me all string properties, and I want to configure them to have a maximum length of 200 instead of what would equate to nvarchar max in the database.
Got it. Okay. So set that up once instead of having to go to each individual one of those.
Absolutely.
And manually attribute them as 200.
Yes.
And then decide half an hour later that it's really supposed to be 175.
Exactly.
And then have to go back and do all of them and then figure out which ones you forgot.
Yeah.
Now you can do it in a line of code. That's
so
cool.
So another good use case, you might be working in an enterprise that has a DBA that wants particular column or table name conventions in the database. So you can write a convention that will convert your CLR property name into a column name for the database, or it can convert your type name into a table name.
Yep.
Not only is that good in your application because you write it once and it applies it to them all, but you can actually reuse that convention across multiple applications. So we could totally see folks coming up with their library of conventions that their enterprise uses and then reusing them across multiple projects.
Very cool. Very cool.
The other really cool thing in Code First, we actually have store procedure support now.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone has been begging for that since we bought Code First out in 4.1. Not only can we map to store procedures for insert, update, and delete, but Code First migrations, if you're letting Code First generate the database, will actually create store procedures for you, scaffold them out in code, and then you have the option to go through and tweak what we've implemented by default.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the coolest features. I love demoing that one because no one likes writing store procedures.
Right.
But showing add migration and then this nice scaffolded sprock is pretty cool.
Very cool, very cool.
Yeah.
What else?
So we've got code-based configuration coming. So if folks are like me, they probably don't like jumping into an app or web.config and trying to work out what XML they should write.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a nice strongly typed API now. You can create a class that derives from DB configuration. Just pop that in your assembly next to your DB context class, and we'll pick it up at runtime, and we'll apply any configuration that you've created in there. This is nice because it gives you IntelliSense. You have some nice strongly typed APIs.
Yep.
We've gone one step further too. The DB configuration is actually a facade over some lower level building blocks that use a dependency resolver. So we actually allow people like provider writers to implement their own services. So one example of this could be when I register a database provider for my database, say I'm using Oracle or MySQL or something, the provider writer could then register a migration SQL generator so that when I install their provider, all of a sudden my application is also able to take my migrations and generate SQL that will work for that provider.
Yep.
Another great example of using this is third-party plugins like Glimpse and other things that you know, plug into my application and give me some extra information.
Mm-hmm.
We're making it a lot easier for folks like that to plug in their services. Some other examples of that would be things like LinkPad, who have been able to do this stuff in the past, but it's been really complicated and fragile and a little bit limited what they can do. We're really trying to work with those guys and open up our API to make it much easier.
Cool.
Yeah.
So do you have a sense of what percentage of people use database first versus code first versus model first, the various flavors of Entity Framework, if you will? Obviously, it all started out with database first, but now code first seems to be much more of a rage. Do you have a sense of what percentage of people are using what?
I think code
and,
first
and
is,
then the follow-up question will be recommendations.
Yeah, absolutely. So code first has definitely had a lot of hype lately because it's a cool new shiny thing we've done.
Yeah.
I think realistically, the majority of people are still using model first or database first. Maybe for new projects that they're spinning up and trying on the weekends or new things they're prototyping. I would say in that very new application area, we're probably about 50-50 at the moment.
Yeah.
And I would expect it to stay there. I think that's pretty reasonable. Half the folks are going to like boxes and lines in a designer. The other half of folks are going to prefer code.
If you've been doing databases your whole life, you know, like me, and then Entity Framework comes along, you have a choice, right? Your new project, I'm more likely to go into SQL Server because that's what I'm used to. But then as time goes on, I actually find myself switching around. So, I can just stay in Visual Studio. Okay.
Yep.
So in that case.
So we've definitely tried to keep that in mind when we built Code First. So a common misconception is that Code First is all about, and it's an understandable one because of the name, writing my code first and then generating the database.
Yeah.
And to be fair, that's actually where we started with the feature. But as we worked on it, we realized Code First is actually a really nice way of writing the model. and we wanted to take that and apply it to targeting an existing database. Mm-hmm. So we did a lot of work to make Code First work targeting an existing database. That's why you'll see you have a lot of control over the shape of the schema and controlling data types and things like that, so we can map to a lot of different schemas.
Right.
We also have the EF Power Tools, which will allow you to reverse engineer a Code First model based on an existing database you have. So if, for example, you felt really comfortable in a database server and you go create some tables, mm-hmm. and then you decide you really like Code First, well, you're not forced to then go and write all your classes by hand. You can use some tools to reverse engineer them for you.
You should come on the Visual Studio Toolbox show and
we should
do that. I should invite you.
We should do that.
We should have an episode based on that. All right,
sounds
let's
good.
Do that.
Sounds very
okay,
good.
Okay, that sounds cool. What are you doing next Thursday? That's when we take.
Flying home? No. So that's some of the big features we've got. We've also got a ton of little features. If you look at the list on our CodePlex site, mm-hmm. you'll see we've got a whole page. It won't fit on your screen of those big things at the top, but then a whole string of little things we're doing. You know, the stuff that's been our backlog that we've really been wanting to do for a long time,
right.
just to make EF easier to use. Some examples, in the past we haven't supported classes that were nested inside other classes. We now have some limitations on it still, but we support a lot more in that okay. area. We have better support for using your own transactions and controlling them. You can create a context with an open connection, a whole bunch of those types of things that weren't big features, but they really make life painful for people that need them.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to that, I'm sure we're going to talk about open source in a second, but yep. We've actually accepted some really cool features from contributors as well. A lot of the contributions we get are bug fixes, but we've had a list, I think there's probably 6 or 7 great little features we've accepted too. One example would be the ability to write your own migration operations. So I have a set of APIs that are exposed in migrations when I scaffold them, but you can now like plug in your own, write them in the first class API, and then add some logic to the SQL generator that knows how to process them.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right, that sounds awesome. Let's shift gears now and talk a little bit about open source.
Sounds great.
You guys want the open source route.
We did.
Tell us a little bit more about what that means and why you decided to do it.
Great.
And what some of the benefits have been of doing that.
Yeah, so we have made the shift to open source, but the story actually starts a bit before that. Right back in the days of EF4, then ramping up with EF4.1, we're trying to be more and more open in the way we develop. Mm-hmm. So this has included things. We started up the EF Design blog, which we've since retired, but we would post feature specifications and things there to try and get folks involved early in the process.
Yep.
Then when we hit the EF4.1 stage, we started doing pre-releases really regularly.
Yes.
At the end of that release, we were doing releases every month. And then in EF4.3, when we started with migrations, we were down to doing pre-releases every couple of weeks when we were really iterating on things.
Yep.
As well as that, on our blog, we've tried to be a lot more transparent about what we're doing, a lot more open about why we're not doing some things, because a lot of the times we're not doing features, but there are very good reasons we're not doing them. Prioritization or just how complex they are.
Have there ever been bad reasons?
I don't think so. I hope not. If they were, I probably wouldn't mention them. Maybe, so. So we've had this process of trying to be more and more open as we go.
Yep.
That kind of culminated in us going open source. So open source is about more than just having our code base public. So our code is public. You can look at it. You can even build it and compile it and use it if you wanted to. You can have your own tweaks in a separate fork.
Right.
Obviously, if you go down that route, you're not getting a Microsoft-supported product. You're
right.
taking our source code under the Apache 2 license and choosing to tweak that and build your own product.
Yes.
In addition to that, we also put all our feature specs out there. In the past, when we had the EF Design blog, we kind of polish up our feature specs and then ship what we thought is what we're going to implement.
Right.
These days on our CodePlex site, we put stuff out when it's still in draft form and we iterate on it there and keep updating it.
Okay.
Even deeper than feature specs, our team meets every week and has at least a 2-hour design session where folks can bring stuff to the table like, hey, I'm working on this feature and the APIs just aren't working out as clean as I was thinking, so let's get together as a team and discuss options for the APIs. Or maybe the behavior of a particular method isn't clear given some certain parameters that I pass in. So mm-hmm. we discuss these things and go backwards and forwards. We even have hour-long discussions on what we should name particular classes and methods.
And this is done openly?
We take notes during this at the moment. We have actually had some external people come and join us. Julie Lerman, who's done a lot of work on EF, she came and joined us for a design meeting. And Unai, who's one of our key contributors, he came and joined us as well. So we've had external folks in. But obviously not everyone can be in the room with us. So we take very detailed notes. Arthur, who's one of the key people on our team, is very meticulous in keeping notes and very quick to get them up online too. So usually within a couple of hours, almost always within a day, the notes are up online and people can comment on our decisions. And we don't just record the outcomes, we record all the options we discussed and why we rejected some of them.
So this is a great way to get the users contributing, the users understanding it.
It absolutely
gives you the ability to find out how users are using it and what issues they're facing a lot sooner than coming out with a release, tossing it over the wall, and then a month later someone comes up to you and says, well, what about this scenario? And you say to yourself, oh, I wish I had known about that 3 months ago.
Exactly.
So now you have the opportunity to contribute beforehand.
Yeah, so contributing is not just about, and we'll talk about this later, but contributing changes. It's also about, you know, giving us your feedback. You can also log bugs on the site. That's great. If you find a bug in EF, log it and help us understand it.
Right. So I'd imagine a lot of users wouldn't necessarily presume to write the Entity Framework.
Absolutely.
But I sure want you to better understand how I'm using it and better understand what I want to see in it.
Yeah. Absolutely. The other thing I should mention, too, we do still have alpha and beta releases. For example, EF6 Beta 1 is out at the moment. And for those releases, we, you know, we run a bit of a test pass. We make sure it works with MVC and all those things. And we wrap it all up, do the tests, sign it, and ship it on NuGet. But actually, every night, we also sign whatever's checked into our code base. And we publish it on a separate MyGet feed, same MyGet feed that the ASP.NET folks are using. And so if we make a change today, then tomorrow morning, you can go and get the nightly build, and you can test out the change we've made. We've actually evolved the code base. Beta 1's been out for about a week now, actually less, but we've already evolved the code base quite a bit since then. Some of it even based on feedback from Beta 1. So if you went and got the nightly build, you'd actually have a different API than what's released in Beta 1 now.
Okay. So before we move on, let's take a couple questions.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Liebert asks, are the Vue's primary key detection going to be better?
So I'm going to kind of assume a few things here. Primary key detection, actually, I suspect she's talking about with the EF designer. I have the ability to map to tables, but I also have the ability to import a view.
Right.
Okay. And when we do that, there are certain scenarios where the view exposes something that is a unique key. For example, if we have a view that exposes blogs, it may have a blog ID column exposed in the view. The EF designer doesn't always do a great job of detecting what is actually the primary key here. In EF6, we're actually not making any changes to improve that, so at times you will have to go in and manually configure. This is just what we do by default, so you can absolutely go in and configure your own primary key once it's imported.
Okay.
Kind of touches on a broader topic. The EF designer, if you create a model in the EF designer, you'll get most of the features that I talked about earlier on. But the designer itself, we're not making many changes in EF6. There's a good reason for that. We really want to be able to ship the EF designer out of band in between releases of Visual Studio. We tried to do this once in the past. We had the June 2011 CTP of Doom. We kind of crashed and burned trying to ship the designer. It was very difficult to uninstall. We still see lots of issues coming up on Stack Overflow, and we're trying to walk people through how to, you know, get their machine back in a good state after installing this thing. So we've done a lot of work to improve that. We do not want to repeat that. So Beta 1 of EF6 is the first time I would say we've done a good release of the designer out of band. It will be included in the next version of Visual Studio, but we also now have the ability to ship it out of band.
Cool.
This has actually taken a lot of work. It's had some dedicated people working on it really hard. So the lack of new features on the design surface is just a byproduct of having to do that.
Okay. Sebastian asks, will Entity Framework 6 support databases with table triggers changing the scope?
Not any more than it currently does. So it sounds like a question we'd probably need to dig into a little bit more.
Okay.
But if you do think, if Entity Framework issues a command and that results in a trigger which goes and touches some other tables, then EF isn't aware of the changes that you've made to those other tables. Now, we have some components built in. So if you know that updating a post is going to result in the blog also being updated, maybe we know that if we insert a post, then there's a post count on the blog table which gets updated. then we have some APIs built in that allow you to easily go and refresh the associated log. But as for doing that automatically at this stage, no, there's nothing new in EF6.
Okay. Are third parties allowed to contribute to the open source project, asks Zippy.
Yes, now we should probably dig into this, because the answer to
Zippy
this might
gives
scale
us our
people.
Segue to go back to talking about open source.
Sounds
so
good.
Third parties are allowed to contribute to the open source project.
Absolutely.
So now I'm an enterprise using Entity Framework, and up until I learned about this, I have been able to trust completely that Entity Framework comes from Microsoft.
Absolutely.
Which means Microsoft guarantees it, supports it, vets it. I can trust the designers, the developers, the testers, since they are from Microsoft.
Absolutely.
Now I learn that third parties can contribute to this. Should I start worrying and be afraid?
Good question to ask, and the answer is no. And let me reassure you a bit more by telling you why you shouldn't be afraid. So third parties are allowed to contribute, but there is a very strict process for them doing it. So the code base is very much a Microsoft-owned Microsoft product. You know, our team owns the code base. We're the only people that have commit rights to the repository. If somebody wants to make a change, then they fork the project and make the changes locally. They're expected to write unit tests and make sure all our existing unit tests pass.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, they're free to submit a pull request to us, which is basically them saying, hey, I've made these changes and I'd like you to consider taking them into EF. At that point, their code goes through exactly the same process that it would if a developer on our team wanted to check in code.
Okay.
So a developer on our team gets assigned to the pull request. They will load it up, they'll run the tests, make sure everything passes. They'll also do an initial vet of the code. So with almost every pull request that comes in, the developer assigned to it is going to make some changes to the code before they even send it out for code review. Whether that's the person's added a public method, but they haven't added IntelliSense docs to it. So the developer will do that. They might standardize a bit of naming. There might be, you know, we don't call connection parameters that, so they'll rename the parameters, et cetera. Do a bit of formatting. If it's missing some really basic unit tests, like they've implemented most of the tests, but maybe there's a couple of cases they didn't think of, then the developer will go and add those tests for it. At this point, it goes out into our code review process, and the way we do code reviews, it gets sent out. The whole team has the opportunity to give feedback on it. Whether that's, you know, functional feedback or whether you should test this scenario. So it goes through that whole process. And once that's done, one of two things happens. One, we either think, okay, we're good, we've looked at the code review, we've implemented the feedback from the code review, we're going to check it in.
Mm-hmm.
Or we say, this code needs some more changes to it before we'd be happy to accept it. And in that case, sometimes we push it back to the original developer and say, we need you to go away and think about these cases, maybe add some more unit tests, come back to us in a little bit with some code. And it's actually been great. Our contributors, I don't think anyone has said, well, don't worry about it at that stage. Everybody has gone away and done the extra work to bring the code up to scratch.
Right.
Actually, there's a third option that can happen too. Sometimes we get pull requests that are for somebody's very specific feature that we don't think it makes sense to pull into EF.
Right.
In those cases, we have turned away a few pull requests and said, this is great, like, you should keep your fork and use it in your enterprise if you want to, or your business, but we don't think it makes sense to take it into EF. And we generally encourage contributors to start a discussion with us first to make sure what they're working on makes sense to come into EF, because we don't want people to go and work on something and then, you know, be the big bad police that say no. We want to talk to you first and say, well, is there a way we could tweak this feature to make it something that would be useful to everyone?
But then it also it's no different than a program manager on your team who comes up with a feature, and then it goes into the pool, and it's decided, oh, we're pretty late in the process, we're shipping in 3 months, it's a little bit late to start this, that would be an interesting thing to think about the next time around. It's really no different than that.
It's not, and actually we have exactly that scenario at the moment. I mentioned someone called Unai came to our design meeting, and he's been working on quite a big, complex feature. Which we're really excited to take because it'll be our first contribution of something that really touches a lot of the EF stack. He started working on it, and as we've worked with him, we've gone, this feels risky to put into EF6. We should hold off. Like, we want to take it. Let's keep working and iterating on it. But we're going to hold off to take it until after the EF6 release.
Right.
Yeah. So we've talked about developing, but you mentioned a good one like support and licensing.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, with our change, the license and the support agreement for EF6 is no different than it was for EF5. So the way I like to phrase it is open source has changed the way we develop, but it has changed nothing in the way we ship.
Right.
So unless you're somebody who wants to go and pick up nightly builds, who wants to dig into the code base, or who maybe wants to contribute a feature, really there's no change to EF.
Yep.
At the end of the day, Microsoft, when it comes time to ship a release, even for our beta releases, we picked it up and we spent a week doing a test pass on it to make sure that it works with all the other technologies.
Mm-hmm.
We run some extra tests in addition to the unit tests that are checked into CodePlex. And once we're happy that it works and that everything else like MVC and web forms all work with it,
right.
At that point, we sign it with a Microsoft certificate. We put a Microsoft license on it. If it's an RTM, we agree to the Microsoft support policies on it. And we ship it as a Microsoft Box product.
And at that point, it's trivia. It's irrelevant to me as the end user whether the feature came from you or from a third-party contributor, whether the developer was a guy who's been at Microsoft for 20 years but has only been on the EF team for 1 year, mm-hmm. or a guy who's been on the EF team from day one, or a third-party.
Exactly.
It's kind of irrelevant. It's interesting. It's trivia. It might be fun to learn. It might be completely uninteresting to me. It's a feature.
Yeah.
Right? What does the feature do? Does it work?
So here's one example where the fact that it was open source might be completely uninteresting, and that's great. But it may have an impact on you because, for example, someone was looking through our code base and was like, oh, I see a really easy way to improve performance for loading large models. Now, if you're working in an enterprise, it's highly likely that you have a big model and you're spending a bit of time every time your application warms up for EF to load your model. Well, thanks to this third-party contribution, your warm-up time is actually greatly improved in EF 6. But of course, that change that the person checked in has been through our quality review.
Yes.
We've had someone look at it and do perf tests on it. We've done security reviews on it, all those sorts of things.
Yep. Cool. So so the takeaway is that the fact that it's open source brings a lot of benefits to the table, but is no cause for concern at the enterprise level. It's still a Microsoft fully supported product where we are using, in certain cases, third parties to help us develop, design, and test the same way we would do as if these people were on the team.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it's also possibly a good way for somebody that wants to work at Microsoft to impress you enough to get hired, I would imagine.
Absolutely, yeah. Implement second-level caching. That's probably our biggest request now. So.
That's not a guarantee, though. We don't guarantee that if you do that, but that would be a good way to impress.
Yeah.
So 6 will be shipping with Visual Studio 2013.
Exactly.
And then there will continue to be updates. Are you on kind of the same update cycle as Visual Studio, or are you on a different cycle? Does it wax and wane?
So this has actually been a really interesting topic. I've had some great conversations with people here. Is as people ship out a band, we start to get different versions of different things at different times. One thing that I think is really important is if you take Visual Studio 2013 as an example, we're putting EF6 in there.
Mm-hmm.
The ASP.NET team has their updates to web forms and MVC, and we make sure that when this Visual Studio 2013 release ships, that everything we put in the box works well together.
Right.
Okay. Now, once that happens, we might start to do some interim releases of EF6. So we'd totally anticipate that in between this release of Visual Studio and the next one, we'll do some point releases. So you can expect probably an EF6.1 or 6.01 or something in the middle there. But then at some point, we're going to all get together as a bunch of teams that work at Microsoft again and come up with the next wave of products, which would probably include the next major version of EF, and ship it all together as something that works very nicely.
Okay. Now, have you found that causes any confusion? So if I take Visual Studio 2013, as it ships out of the box, I'm using a particular version of MVC, I'm using a particular version of the framework. When I create an MVC project, it will go and get the latest version of the Entity Framework for me.
Actually, when you create an MVC project, it will install a predefined set of NuGet packages. So don't feel like creating a new project is going to reach out to NuGet and just grab the latest stuff. It grabs a vetted and approved list of NuGet packages that ship in the box. So you're getting a set of technologies that we know work really well together. Mm-hmm. You're free then to upgrade in between, and we check that EF6, if we release 6.1, we're going to make sure that works with MVC and web forms and everything. But when it comes time to start Visual Studio and create a new project, you're going to get a list of stuff that we know works well together.
Okay, cool. Any last words before we cut out?
As we wrap up EF6, we're thinking about the next version. please head to our User Voice site and our Coplex site. Let us know what features are important to you. That'll help us determine what we're going to do in the next release as well.
Awesome. Thanks a lot for coming on.
Always my pleasure. Thank you, Robert.
All right. Thanks, everybody.